Welcome to the Balanced, Beautiful, and Abundant Show. My name is Rebecca Whitman, and I'm a success mentor. I believe there are seven pillars of success: your spiritual life, your physical fitness, your emotional, romantic, mental, social, and finally, your financial life. When you get all seven areas in alignment, you are balanced, beautiful, and abundant. I learned this the hard way. I've always made money. Unfortunately, I spent so much time making money that I never had time for the rest of my life. So, despite not having financial worries, I was never happy. I wanted romance, but I didn't have time to date. I wanted to be in great shape, but I couldn't find a moment to go to the gym. I wanted a more spiritual life, but I didn't meditate. That also takes time. I wanted to read great books and fill my mind with deep thoughts, but I never made the time. I wanted a great social life, not just going to work-related events. Emotionally, I was a wreck because my life was totally out of balance. Today, I earn more money than I ever have in my life, and I work only part-time. I have the relationship of my dreams. I'm in the best physical shape of my life. I'm spiritually grounded. I feel fulfilled mentally, socially, and emotionally. My life is in perfect alignment. This podcast will help you discover where your life is out of balance. My mission is to support you in achieving work-life balance so that you can have more fun and freedom in life. On my show, you will get to learn from experts in all seven areas of abundance. My guests have achieved tremendous success in their zone of genius. Are you ready to go to a level 10 in all seven areas of life? You got this.
Welcome, Susan Elliott, to the Balanced, Beautiful, Abundant Show.
Thank you so much for having me. It's such an honor to be here and be part of your tribe.
Yes, I'm so excited that you found the show through a search, and it's just awesome that you're going to talk about how to make money in flow state and real estate. I'm so excited to talk to you about all this stuff. Let me tell my listeners a little bit about your background. So Susan Elliott helps active entrepreneurs and professionals grow their wealth and their time back with alternative investments in real estate. She teaches homeowners how to not lose their homes while providing great returns on their investments. So I'm actually a landlord. I have several properties in LA, and I was looking at your bio saying that you don't want to be a landlord. So for someone like myself, tell me, why is real estate investing through notes less work than being a landlord?
Oh, such a great question. Just jump right to the meat of it. I too started out as a landlord. That's the best way to get into real estate investing because there's so many people that do it. It's well-paved tracks. So getting a rental property is a great way to, you know, deploy some of your investment dollars outside of the stock market just for diversification. But we quickly find out that being a landlord can actually be a lot of headaches. It can be a lot of work, especially if you're self-managing your properties, which yeah. I would hope that you're kind of clue into that immediately, that it's actually worth paying a property manager, but you still have to manage the property manager quite a bit. And really, like, just having tenants who maybe don't want to take good care of your property and the maintenance of the housework, the yard work, the snow, it can pile up a lot. This dealing yeah. with tenants can sometimes be stressful. So with note investing, you're more like the bank in that scenario. And so owning a note.
What does owning a note mean? I've never even heard that terminology.
Such a great question. Let's start there. So a note is like the paper world behind the real estate. So the note It's made up of the loan documents that you sign when you get your mortgage. It says, you know, you're going to pay this this balance amount over this many years with this interest rate for this amount per month and a bunch of other legalese. In that language, your home, the physical property, is secured to that promise to pay through the mortgage or deed of trust. That whole package is the note. So it's a cash flowing asset. The banks are cash flowing off of these notes, right? Via the interest that you're paying through your loan, right? You're paying down your balance little bits by little bits, especially in the beginning, but you're paying a lot of interest in the beginning, and that's all the bank making that money. So it's actually possible for people like you and me to own notes. It's even possible.
Real estate. So
exactly. You have the property as collateral. So if anything happened, if that borrower stopped paying their mortgage, you have the legal right to take back the property. So you have a securing asset back there, the value of the home behind it, but you're cash flowing just straight monthly payments. There, you have a servicer typically, which kind of is like a property manager, but they're just there to communicate with the borrower and collect payments. And basically that's it. It's really kind of the straightest form of mailbox money that you can have. But even within there, just like in real estate investing, there's a lot of little niches that you can do to get into it. So I'm here to try to help people see that it even exists, that there's other options than just being a landlord. I've seen too many people kind of turn away from real estate investing in general because they didn't like being a landlord, but there's so many other options.
I love this. I have the craziest situation with a tenant. I'm sure he's not listening. He is a vet from Afghanistan and he has some PTSD and he's paranoid. So he has put like a 10-foot camera above the house to like survey the whole neighborhood for protection. And the neighbors are like, we have kids. Like, we don't want a camera like peering into our yard.
But oh my.
He has PTSD, so how can I, you know, explain to him that's not okay? So I'm actually probably a great client for you because I'm like, I'd rather just like shuffle some paper around than like deal with, you know, all the drama going on in one of my properties right now. So this is incredible. So how do you buy this paper? Do you have to hire a broker? Like, do you go directly to the banks? I've never heard of...
That's a good question. So, well, first, you know, just like any form of real estate investing, there's a lot of due diligence that goes into it. And I would never recommend anyone just kind of go out and try to find a note because there's places on the internet, paperstack.com being one of them. You can go and just buy a note. But if you don't know what you're looking at to evaluate it, I highly recommend that you don't just dive in. There's a lot of ways to get education and even start to buy notes as an individual. There's also a lot of ways to partner with people. That's what my company does. We create joint venture partnerships to partner with investors to be able to help them understand, but also deploy their capital at the same time. So we're not strictly education. I'm not trying to sell you a weekend course or doing that. I'm trying to say that through this partnership, you can learn a little bit about what's going on because it's your capital that's being deployed. But you can also have our track record behind it so that you know what's happening. So there's a lot of ways to get into it within that spectrum. And even for the fully passive, the fund model, you can, you know, invest as a limited partner in a fund that has a big pool of notes to be able to diversify through notes. But we get our notes exactly from broker partnerships or directly from banks or large hedge funds. So we're working with the asset managers at these institutions who are looking to get rid of their notes to rebalance their portfolio. They want to be originating new notes all the time. And we specifically focus in the niche of non-performing notes. So this is like the fix and flip world of the note, okay, of the note world. But it's really neat because we look for notes that the borrower is not paying at all. And you might think like, well, that's a terrible idea. Why would I invest in that? But we're doing our due diligence such that we can find that this borrower actually wants to try to keep their home. And we can see that in the paper trail. We can see that in all the research we do on that individual. And we have the ability to buy that note and completely wipe the terms out and create new terms, essentially to refinance them in ways that the traditional banks aren't allowed to do. we can do that and lower their monthly payments and get them back on track with keeping that property. And then once they're paying for at least a year, we have a performing note, and that's worth a lot more on the secondary market. So we can sell that as if you would have come in and rehabbed a beautiful kitchen, a couple bathrooms, maybe added a bedroom, and then sold that as a fix and flip. Very similar scenario. So that's just like our niche within the note world. But again, a lot of ways to get into it.
That reminds me of the car business. I used to sell cars. So there were the people with good credit who got the regular financing, and there were the people with challenge credit that got a whole different area of financing. Is it kind of the same with note with real estate notes?
A little bit. Yeah. You know, this is kind of like an extra opportunity before foreclosure for these borrowers, for these owners. So if the banks were to hold on to this asset, they would foreclose. They have no interest in going through a loan modification process. They're not in the business of doing that. They just want to get through volume, right? Large volume of really good assets. And so they're looking to people like us in the secondary industry to be able to handle this. Whether, you know, there's some people like me who just take those and try to get the house. They just move straight to foreclosure as well. And they're looking to get that property. But I want to move to helping that borrower. Not only does it help the borrower, obviously, keep their home and provide generational wealth for time to come, but it also is actually the best return strategy for us.
This is so fascinating to me. I'm actually really glad you found my podcast, because I think I might invest. Is there a minimum investment to go in on one of these joint ventures?
Great question. With us at Flow State, we offer a minimum of $50,000 partnership. And we use that minimum because we're looking for pretty high quality assets. We want a house that is holding good value. We want a borrower that has made equity contributions to their home. They already have a stake in the deal, right? So there's notes that you can purchase out there for $6,000, for $10,000, for $15,000. But we've often found that those properties are just, you're taking much more risk in being able to say that this property is going to sell again later on, or that this borrower isn't just going to kind of like toss me around as it were. So that's our minimum investment amount, is $50,000.
That makes sense. So I talk a lot about time, money, freedom. To me, time is more valuable than money, because money, you can make it and lose it and make it again. But time is something that we never get back. And we don't know how much of it we have left. We don't know, you know, when our card's going to be pulled and we're going to leave the planet. So what is your opinion about time versus money? I'd love to hear it.
I love that question. You know, it immediately made me think of thinking about making money and then initially investing as much of it as you can, because you're investing in that time at that point. Because if you can build up your investments enough that they're able to start paying you, not someday into retirement, we're not working for some time in the distant future. That's really hard to, you know, get in our heads. That's really not very tangible. If we're able to make investments that say pay us monthly cash flow or give us a return in 12 months to be able to reinvest or to start living off of that return, right? We're able to start to get that time back sooner. So I like that, you know, the time value of money or making money versus kind of creating more time, which one should we be striving to do? And it's, I think about that. And again, like when we make our money, what can I do with that money first that's going to give me more time? Not right. Give me more stuff to be happy right now, but like give me more time to be able to enjoy my life. And then with what's left over, right? Ideally, we're making good amounts of money that we can invest, and we can also spend time doing the things we love right now. But we're thinking about that as in a closer event. That's kind of what I think of with that.
Absolutely. And I know that for time for you is very valuable because you have a young child, right? Don't you have a daughter?
I do. She's 3.5 years old. And, you know, I was kind of, my life was just golden and beautiful from what I understood for so many years, for decades. I lived just an extraordinary life of international travel and adventure. I was an international whitewater kayak guide and a pro athlete and just lived to the max, right? But I neglected the finance piece. And I just decided that it wasn't valuable for me to pursue making money. I had this negative baggage around money. And having my daughter, of course, like kicks you into like a little bit more of a responsibility mode, but it was the time. It wasn't that like, I don't have enough money to have a kid. That was never a question, but it was that I suddenly am giving up 40 plus hours of my life. And now I have this child who grows at an exponential rate, as it seems, and I'm missing it. And so it was that element that was like, I have to do something different. And that's when I got into real estate investing for the most part. That's when I started my company in real estate investing. And I said, this is good enough that I'm going to create a business here.
That's great. How did you learn about this mode of investing and making money?
Good question. Well, when we went to go buy our first home, my husband and I had, we literally been traveling the world for like a decade, living out of vehicles and RVs and campsites and just like, again, focusing on really extraordinary, rich experiences and not acquiring a lot of stuff. And I still really value that lifestyle. But of course, we were like, we want to buy a home. We want to build equity. We don't want to rent anymore. And so it was kind of around that point where I had this kind of financial breakthrough. I realized I'd been living in financial anxiety for so many years. It wasn't until I could name it that I really understood that that's what it was, but I would get panic attacks when I got bills. And when I even tried to think about retirement, it would just send me into a frantic tizzy. But, so as we were buying my home, I thought, I'm going to turn this into a rental. I have friends who have rentals. There's no reason I can't do it. So we bought a home that I could split into a duplex. We lived in half of it and I rented out the other half. And now it's a full-time rental. And so that was my plan. I said, we're going to move every 2 years. We're going to get a new FHA loan. We're going to buy another primary residence and we're going to turn it into a rental and just keep on moving for 10 years. We'll have 10 houses at least. But I quickly found out that I loved real estate investing more. I just kept learning about different strategies. I got into managing Airbnb portfolios for a while. I have our own Airbnb house that I just love. I love giving people that experience. But it was the notes that really struck with me as far as this is a really easy way for me to not give up all my time and still invest in real estate. And it's just feels really good to be, you know, like our intent is to change people's lives with our real estate money. Our intent is like to impact them at that very vulnerable point of, oh my God, I'm almost about to lose my home. And that felt really authentic to me as well. And luckily I found a partner, two partners who were right in alignment with that. And we just kind of knew something was good here.
No, we're in a big post-COVID recession. So many people have lost their businesses and there's so many empty storefronts, especially in LA and New York. So this is actually an industry that will profit because a lot of industries grow during recession. So I would think that because so many people are in, you know, almost in foreclosure, that your industry of buying these notes is probably growing during the recession. Am I right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, we chose to scale up at the beginning of the pandemic because you could just see what was happening with the like everyone leaving their jobs, getting kicked out of their jobs, right? Like losing their jobs, but not for reasons that they brought into their life. You know, these weren't people that lost their jobs because of something they did. It was just this circumstance that brought down. So I think that while some people are really in hard positions now, especially as forbearance programs are ending, people are having to start making their mortgage payments again. And even if they've worked out a scenario, they're probably still, many of them are trying to find jobs or they're working with new jobs and figuring that out and different, like everything has changed, right? So it's really shaken it up. And you're right. This industry does really well in the hard times. It does. It, you know, when there's people struggling to make their mortgage payment, when something happens like this, then note investing, at least the style that I'm in, where I'm trying to keep them in the house, but there's more of a supply out there for people.
And the forbearance, because I looked into that too as a homeowner, they weren't really waiving payments. So you just have like a balloon payment now that the pandemic is over. And I'm sure a lot of people are like, how am I going to make this like quadruple or quintuple payment? So a lot of people are really grateful for your program. So what does an abundance mindset actually mean to you?
An abundance mindset to me means that I have everything to like live peacefully and happily in this moment right now. It's not something in the future. It is like evaluating my bucket list and realizing that I have everything that I need in that bucket list. And that bucket list is my daughter and my husband. Am I showing up for them? Is my mind and my body, am I showing up for myself to be a strong and happy and peaceful warrior here in this world? And the third bucket is, am I showing up for my friends, my families, my coworkers, and all of the people around me, the investors that I work with? Am I doing the best I possibly can with their investing dollars? Am I working with them? And am I reaching out? Am I providing education? Am I there for my parents? All of those kinds of relationships in the world. So abundance to me is like, I look in all of those three buckets and I'm just like, oh, I have it all. I'm here. And so it's a present moment thing.
And it's a lot about showing up for you, which is great. But as women, we have to fill our bucket first and we have to do our self-care so we can show up as the best daughter, wife, and mother.
So exactly. You're right. I mean, I've even thought about that. Should I switch number two with number one, where it's my mind and body first before my daughter's mind and body? And it is absolutely true. I mean, I've just run my first 50K trail marathon this past weekend. And
50K.
50K, I know. It went right. Right. For that's 30 miles. And, it was beautiful, but it required some Saturdays where I just ran for hours and hours. And I had to prioritize that. Otherwise the event wasn't going to happen. Otherwise I wouldn't, you know, so I set myself up to do things like that so that I kind of have to spend the time, but it was really hard. It's always hard prioritizing yourself when you say, I'm going to go run for 4 hours or do anything for myself for 4 hours. When you have, you know, other people also needing from you. But when I came home from those runs, I was the best mother on the planet. Yeah. I was the best wife on the planet. And that is that, like, the wisdom of just listening to that heart piece inside that I knew that I needed to do this for some reason, really paid off.
So what does your training regimen look like? Like, how do you even train to run 30 miles or 50K? Tell us.
Good question.
What is typical? To switch topics, just because I'm a total fitness enthusiast and gym rat. Yeah. What does that look like? What does your weekly workout schedule look like?
Good question. Well, I pivoted to running after I had my daughter because I could do it much easier. I could just put on a pair of shoes. And I luckily live in a place where I have miles and miles of trail running and gorgeous mountains right out my back door for the most part. I live near Mount Hood and Mount Adams in the Pacific Northwest in the Cascade Range. And so being in the mountains to me also fulfills something within my spirit. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I'm kind of killing two birds with one stone for that reason, at least, like, you know, again, it's the rationality of kind of like, I'm going to spend this time. And when you're ending it, it's like, this was worth it. But my training regimen, you know, I go for runs at least every other day, if not 3 or 4 days a week. I don't run every day because I don't think I need it, but I ramp up my long mile runs over the weekends. And so it might start with an 8 and then a 12 and then 16. And then I might go back to 8 for a rest week. And then it's 12, 16, 20. And I might go back to 12 and then 16, 20, 25. And I might go back to 16 after that. But so I'm trying to get in at least like 2 or 3 runs where I'm in that like 25 mile zone to train for a 30 mile event. So I'm not running 30 miles every weekend to train for this race. That was the big event. That was the long run. And then I do strength workouts, which are really great kind of mind breaks from computer work or just during breaks while I'm standing in line at the grocery store. I can do my like calf raise exercises. I can even do my like Russian deadlifts in the middle of, you know, the doctor's office waiting room. I kind of squeeze things in, but I am pretty intentional about trying to get the basic kind of strengthening exercises to be able to complement the long runs.
So when you do your running workout, how long is your run usually?
Well, those long weekend runs are 2 to 6 hours. I mean, my race was a 6-hour race. It's it's a long run. You know, the race, I was moving faster than my other runs. I stop and I eat a lot while I run, to keep up the calorie intake. And, you know, and I find myself like struggling for 3 miles and then I just feel the flow. And then I feel like it's in there. And it is such a meditative practice for me too. I've gotten into a good morning meditation practice that's short, but my long meditation runs are just like, you're so in tune with your body functioning and your individual breaths and individual steps and every muscle in your body. And do I need some calories? Do I need some water? You're really listening to yourself. And you even, you know, you're thinking, but eventually it even turns into just like being and sort of breathing. And you know, you've got to focus on other things. And all of a sudden you haven't even thought about running for the past 3 miles or that kind of thing. So running has turned into that for me. I used to do a lot of kayaking and a lot of biking, and it was just taking a lot more effort to get out and do those sports. So running was a nice one as a mom and an entrepreneur and just the high action woman that I am.
So let's talk about flow state, because I know you named your financial firm Flow State Investing, right?
I did. Yes.
So
yes.
What does flow state mean to you, Susan?
Flow state is a state of being where everything feels like it's the right next step, mm-hmm. where everything feels easy and where I'm moving towards a destination at exactly the right pace for myself, for that action, for that outcome, even if I don't even know what the outcome is. But it's kind of that locked in feeling of doing something where you just can move without thinking about it, without questioning it. You're just going by intuition and feeling what comes next, but it's not as if it's devoid of thinking either. You certainly are, you know, calculating and evaluating on every single moment. So, you know, and I thought about that because I had found that in outdoor adventure and athletics, you know, as a whitewater kayaker, I'm quite literally in the flow in a river and white water where you are so in tune with every locking moment of predicting what you're going to do off of different waves, off of different rocks as you go down the river. But then I found it when I was running. I found it sometimes when I was just having a really good conversation and really listening to someone and talking and communicating with people. And so to bring it to the financial world for me was the missing piece. Again, it was like the finance piece where I thought it's okay to want to make money and I want to have a financial flow state. I want it to be so effortless and easy and abundant that I know I'm moving in the right direction. And so by naming my company Flow State Investing, it's like just a blatant reminder every day that that's what I'm here for.
I love it. So let's go to whitewater rafting. I was reading in your bio that you paddled over 50 rivers. So how is whitewater rafting the perfect analogy for life?
Mm-hmm. You know, whitewater rafting and whitewater kayaking is like, it is, it's an individual, but it's a team sport. Mm-hmm. And it requires you to be in the present moment, but be aware of your surroundings and your future, your immediate future and your long-term future at different kind of varying moments, but always grounded in the very present moment. You know, if you are thinking too much about what you want to do downstream, then you neglect what you're doing right now and you'll get stuck. But if you think too much about not getting stuck right here, you're going down the wrong channel because you weren't looking up and looking at where you want to go and the long distance. And really it's really about feeling a little bit free too. You are kind of at the will of the river a little bit. Now, you know, we train for years and we know how to navigate over rapids and be able to stay safe out there and even show people how to do it, teach people, guide people out there. But, you know, you are submitting to the will of the river when you put yourself into it. And so there's something in that, just like letting go of the attachment that you have control over it. Yeah. Sometimes too, I think is a good analogy for life. Good question.
I love what Abraham Hicks talks about, because they have this whole analogy with whitewater rafting, and they talk about resistance. And when we're in resistance, we're fighting with reality and we're going upstream, and we waste a lot of time and energy, and it's exhausting fighting with the river, fighting with the current of where life is taking us. But if we let go of the oars and just let the river take you where it's going to take you, because it's going anyway and it's stronger than us. So I call the river flow God's will. It's God's will is going to happen whether we like it or not. So we can either align our will with God's will and let go of the oars and like have all this momentum behind us and have a fun ride, or we can fight, and that's when we become exhausted and burned out and we get drained and mm-hmm. we don't get what we want anyway. So mm-hmm. I think whitewater rafting is such a great analogy for life. It's amazing. Mm-hmm. So I think
that's great. I love that.
That is the end of our interview. This has been so interesting. Oh, I wanted to ask you, what professional sport did you play? You said you were a professional athlete.
I was a professional kayaker. So I was a sponsored kayaker. I've got to paddle in rivers all over the world. I've actually paddled over 300 rivers. The 50 rivers yeah. you were looking at is for, I wrote a guidebook called Paddling America, and it's for the top 50 wild and scenic rivers in the country. So my husband and I paddled those, in all different watercrafts and canoes and rafts and kayaks.
Wow.
But yeah, as kind of a professional athlete, you know, I was a paddle sports representative. I was someone who spoke for the river. I was someone who, you know, got other people into paddling. I competed in events. I was on a junior team at some point, but it's not like an Olympian status as far as a professional athlete. But I did it so much so that I was paid a little bit for it, and I was sponsored, and it was a beautiful part of my life.
That's amazing to get paid to do something that you would do for free, right?
It is amazing. I laugh because, you know, I saw it as a win then, but I also didn't value money enough to ask for more. And I think that I probably would have done that. I would have leveraged it a little bit differently to be able to build a financial freedom future for myself. And at the time, I sort of just didn't deprioritize the making money aspect of it. So I worked hard enough that in a world of very few paid athletes or sponsored athletes in kayaking and water sports that I was one of them. But I had some things to learn yet.
Well, I think we're always learning. My biggest fear of whitewater rafting is I don't want to fall in.
That's a good point. Yeah. Most people don't. It's not a good idea most of the time. So you need a really good guide out there to help you down.
So how do you avoid falling in the water?
Well, you go with someone who knows what they're doing. That's one. That's a good thing. You have a guide on the boat. You go with someone who can teach you, it really is, when you fall out of the boat, it's because you're putting the boat somewhere that it shouldn't be, or you're, you know, it's all physics. So I could dive into the physics of hitting a wave, the different angles and the way that it flips and how you pop out, you know, but generally keep paddling. The paddling keeps you in the boat, or sit in the bottom of the boat if you really don't want to hop out, or go with a guide who will teach you a little bit more about what that person is doing with where they're putting the boat in the water too. And you'll learn a little bit about the dynamics of it.
Have you ever fallen out during a competition?
No, I have during a competition, but I've had to get out of my kayak or fallen out of my raft many times. It happens many times over, and you get to the point where it is actually sometimes fun swimming in whitewater. It's like a little bit of a roller coaster, but sometimes it's scary. And I got to the point in kayaking too, where, you know, people would fall out and they wouldn't come back. So mm-hmm. it was at a point where you have to know, you have to have a risk analysis that is right for you, and it's right for you in the moment, and it's right for you, your partners that you're with, and make good decisions out there. So it can be really dangerous, but it can also be fun, even if you're out of the water.
So I think of whitewater rafting as investing in real estate notes. It can be scary if you don't have a good guide. So if people want to get in touch with you to talk more about real estate investing and buying notes, how can they keep in touch with you?
Oh, thanks. Well, head over to my website, flowstateinvesting.com. You can always shoot me an email. I'm Susan@flowstateinvesting.com. And if you sign up for our investor circle, you'll get a link to schedule a call with me, and then I can chat with you about notes as much as you like. I really like sharing it with people. I like helping them break free of the real estate investing mindset that you have to be a landlord to do it. But you can also find me on Instagram. I'm SheSeeksFlow on Instagram. That's a good place to reach out and say hello.
And you also have a freebie, right? About just general questions about real estate investing.
I do. I have a field guide to note investing, but it's a 5 steps to thinking about note investing. But it really does start with just like, what is real estate investing and why might that be a good strategy for you and your time and your life? So if you go to flowstateinvesting.com/field-guide, you can download our field guide there. And it's really meant for someone who wants more time freedom. They want to leverage passive income. They want to have more control through real estate investing.
Incredible. Well, thank you so much, Susan, for being on the Balanced, Beautiful, Abundant show. This is a grassroots movement. That's how Susan found us. We don't have paid advertisers. We rely on our wonderful listeners. So take a screenshot, tag me and Susan on Instagram, share this with a friend. If you're on Facebook, tag a friend who you think might benefit from learning how to real estate invest. And if you're listening on the podcast platforms, give us a 5-star review. Like Susan did. That's how she caught my attention. She gave me a 5-star review. So leave us a review like Susan did, and we will look forward to seeing you next time with another incredible guest. And until then, keep your vibe high and your hands clean.
Who says you can't have it all? I'm proof that you can. You just have to put your life into balance. Too much of anything, money, fitness, socializing, can overtake your life. When all 7 aspects of your life work in harmony, you will achieve the balanced, beautiful, and abundant life you've always dreamed of. Please subscribe to hear more inspiring interviews. Is there someone you know who could benefit from this podcast? Please share this podcast with them. Please review this podcast. Your feedback will help me target your needs and plan for upcoming shows that answer your questions and feature guest speakers that can make a big difference in your life. Follow me on Twitter and Instagram at Rebecca E. Whitman. Feel free to DM me to book a free balance assessment call. And don't forget, stay balanced, beautiful, and abundant.